Sunday with Miriam on RT Radio 1, sponsored by Travel Department. Explore the wonder of the world's most iconic sites with Travel Department, the world discovered together.
But first this morning, in 2018, just 4 days into her honeymoon, Zoe Holohan lost her husband, Brian O'Callaghan Westropp, in a wildfire in Greece. Zoe suffered severe burns herself, and she has written and spoken about grief, recovery and remembering. 7 years on, Zoe is still dealing with the aftermath of the fire, but she has a new perspective on life and a new relationship to talk about. Zoe Holohan, good morning to you and thanks for coming in today.
Good morning, Miriam. It's great to be here. Thank you.
I'm delighted you're here. And listen, we are going to talk about new beginnings and all the positive things happening in your life. But I think we need to remind our listeners this morning about your story and Brian's story. I think you were together for years, weren't you, Zoe, before you got married in 2018. What was Brian like?
Oh, Brian was brilliant. He was a wonderful, wonderful man. Very, very kind, very warm, very generous with his time, actually. He used to spend a lot of time on the back of his motorbike. Not so he could escape me, by the way, but he worked with Blood Bikes East as a charity. So he was, you know, he dedicated a lot of his time to helping people in need. I don't know whether you know much about Blood Bikes, but they basically transport organs, they transport blood, supplies, etc. to hospitals free of charge all across the country.
Wonderful.
So I think that gives you a glimpse into the type of person he was.
And can I ask you, say, about the life you thought you would have with Brian? The plans, I suppose, you'd made together.
Yeah, I mean, we had lots of imagined plans before July 2018. We were already living together for about 4 years at that stage, but we had planned to sell up our mutual properties and go set up a new home together. Life was good. It was positive. We loved to travel and, yeah, I suppose now it's hard to describe or even envisage what our future plans were.
Yeah.
Once, you know, when I think about Brian, obviously I think about him, you know, with a very full heart of love, but also I can't forget about what happened at the very end. So I've kind of deleted those future plans because, to be honest with you, in July, our lives imploded. And not just our future plans together, but my whole life dramatically changed as a result of the fire.
Do you mind taking me back to that time and remind people what happened in Greece? You were on your honeymoon. What happened?
Well, it was July 23rd. 2018, we were in a beautiful little seaside town known as Mati, off the coast of Athens. And, oh gosh, on that terrible day, these wildfires started from the east and from the west, and unfortunately we were right in the middle. Originally, it was reported 104 people were killed in those fires. Recently, because obviously I'm very much in touch with a lot of people over there, a lot of fellow survivors. We discovered a grave that contained 16 unnamed other victims. So now the toll is 120. I feel like I know all of the 104 names in my head, but unfortunately, and I can't get those poor 16 people, including a child, by the way, out of my mind because they're unmourned. And, you know, they haven't been given the proper burial rites. But yes, the day... it was a terrible day. We were there 4 days only. Sorry, we were only there 2 days at that stage, but we'd been married 4 days previously. And the fire just came from nowhere. We were sitting there out the back garden having a beautiful honeymoon in scorching sunshine. Went inside for a siesta. And I know I've gone into a lot of detail. I won't go into the finer detail of what happened every second of the day, but we desperately tried to escape, and it seemed like the gods were against us. Every moment we turned, we had obstacle upon obstacle to stop us both escaping and surviving unscathed. Just to give you an example, the electricity was cut off, so we couldn't get out in the car. We were in a villa with an electric gate, so we were blocked in. So we had to climb over the gate. And at that point, when I jumped over the gate, I dislocated my knee because it was about 9 feet tall. It was a high gate. We had to run through. The only thing I could say was a tornado of fire. What fire was just whirling all around us. There was debris everywhere. It was visibility was extraordinarily poor, as you can imagine. In fact, I don't think anybody can imagine.
No.
We were in the eye of an inferno, frankly. You can't see anything. Your eyes are streaming. Every breath you take is agonising. It was like swallowing acid. So our eyes were burning, our nose, our mouth. And of course, at some stage, I unfortunately was wearing a long dress and that went on fire. So my legs were very severely burned at that stage while we were still running, trying to escape. And Brian, being the hero that he was, tried to put out the flames. So his hands must have got really badly burned. The weird thing is adrenaline takes over in those moments. So I recall the pain after, but I don't recall it there in that moment. You just, all you're doing is engaging every sense to survive. And we ran and we ran, and eventually we came to the top of a hill. In fact, I only discovered much later that we actually ran in a full circle. And that just gives you an idea of how confusing this whole scenario was. And it might as well have been in the pitch black. It was early afternoon, but it was so dark and so impossible to see even your hand in front of you. But eventually we encountered a car coming up the road. Well, prior to seeing the car, we saw a little bunch of children. Now, in my confusion, I couldn't recollect if it was four or five. It turned out it was five little children. Mm-hmm. And they were just standing. They just emerged like ghosts out of the ether. And they were standing at the top of this hill, surrounded by fire, surrounded by flames. One was in a nappy, tiny little thing. So that's when you forget about your own needs and your own requirements. So we ran to these children and just swept them up in our arms. And by some miracle, a car just emerged out of nowhere. We couldn't see anything else at this stage, but this car came out of the smoke, and we stood in front of the car and got them to stop. There were three adults in the car. So we, without even thinking, opened the back door and just effectively threw the kids in the back seat. And then we begged them to open the boot because there wasn't enough room. And it was a small car. There wasn't enough room for Brian and I. So we climbed into the boot and held it down, because obviously you couldn't close the boot, and the car took off at a great speed up a hill. Now, at that stage, I had, for my wedding, 4 days prior, some very beautiful, long, voluminous hair extensions. Unfortunately, they were highly flammable, so my hair was on fire. My hair had cooked into my face, cooked into my eye. I could feel that my face was just melting. My hand was on top of, holding onto the boot for dear life, and that also welded to the metal of the boot, so my hand was extraordinarily badly damaged. And Brian was speaking to me, but the sound of the flames was so loud. I don't know whether he was praying. I really don't know what he was saying at this stage, but he was trying to comfort me and I was trying to comfort him. But we were burning. We were burning to death, and that it was what I assumed was going to be our coffin. And in the moment that the car crashed, because it did within seconds, the car crashed. And this tree, a burning tree, just came down right on top of the open boot. And in the process of that falling on top of us, Brian fell out of the car. I had been holding his hand with my one good hand, but I, in the shock, in that bolt of that moment, I let go. And Brian rolled out of the boot into the flames and just died in front of my eyes. And his last words were, "Why?" That's... That's a sound you're never going to forget, believe you me. I was trying to call to him. I knew what was happening, but I was trying to call to him to let him know that, you know, the last thing that he would hear on this earth was the voice of his brand new wife telling him how much I loved him. So, yeah.
God, sorry.
Yeah. And you know, the unfair thing is, like, he was the hero. He carried those children to safety. Everybody in that car, myself included, survived. OK, I definitely didn't escape unscathed, but I survived. And I'll tell you how in a moment. Thank God the kids were totally unharmed. The three adults had minor injuries, but the man who saved those children passed away. Yeah, so that was something that I really wanted to, I wanted it, that's Brian's legacy, to remind people that he really was heroic in nature.
Remarkable.
And that he always put other people first.
Remarkable.
Ahead of himself. Do you want to know how I was carried to safety? There's a wonderful man. His name is Manas Saliagos. And Manas Saliagos works for the civil defence. So, for all intents and purposes, looked like a fireman, but really just as a volunteer firefighter. It's very different in Greece to, you know, what the system that we would have here. But basically, this man just emerged out of a wall of fire. And I thought the reason he'd rescued me was because I was still calling to Brian. But apparently no, because I was entirely covered by the embers of this tree. But the only visible sign that there was still life was my right eye was blinking, because he thought I was dead. Mm. And he saw my right eye blink and he just carried me, lifted me, got rid of whatever was covering me, the embers, and carried me to safety. And all I have this unbelievably clear as crystal memory of being carried through wall after wall of fires. And he was speaking to me in my ear in Greek. He has no English, by the way. He has a little now, you know, I'm trying to teach him. He's trying to teach me Greek and that's not going so well. It's all Greek to me. Sorry. But yeah, he carried me to safety.
What a hero.
Unbelievable. And by the way, also saved several other people, went back after bringing me to safety, went back to save others. Now, he saw horrors over the next few days there as well, because he was part of the clear-up. But Manas and I have obviously become very close friends, so we've had lots of discussions since then. And
you obviously, yourself, you survived, but you survived, I think, with lasting injuries.
Yeah.
What injuries?
Life-changing injuries, yeah.
Do you mind telling me?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to preface it by saying I feel extraordinarily lucky and grateful.
You also look, by the way, 100% perfect and beautiful.
Thanks. So it's 8 inches of cosmetics.
Well, it works.
I was severely burned all over my face, my chest, arms, hands. I told you about my left hand was probably the most severely damaged. It just didn't even resemble a hand. It was just curled up bones with little scraps of flesh attached. And my legs. So I had third and fourth degree burns. My legs were so badly burned, they were burnt right down to the bone. So I in the early stages in the Mitera hospital, where I eventually ended up in Athens, I was told the likelihood was they'd amputate the hand and possibly I'd never walk again. Who knew? But at that stage, you know, when you're wrapped from head to toe in intensive care, I didn't know if I'd ever regain sight. Little teeny tiny miracles every step of the way happened. The first moment where they unpeeled my eyes after many surgeries. So I was in and out of surgeries for an entire month, every 2 days, major surgeries to save my sight, to save my hand, to save my legs. So it was I was on a constant, what would you call it, turnstile almost, in out. The funny thing is, I mean, this was the most goddamn awful moment in my life, without doubt. I was slightly in denial. I thought maybe Brian was still alive and maybe I started to rewrite history in my head, changed the narrative. I was worried that he wouldn't recognise me because my face was so badly deformed at that stage. And I know deformed is a hard word to use, but I'm using it because I'm talking about how I felt at that moment. I no longer feel that way, but that's how I felt at that moment. And I was terrified he wouldn't recognise me. He might be wandering out from hospital to hospital looking for me. But the miracle moment when they unpeeled the bandages from my left, the left side of my face, and within a few minutes, I got just a tiny little bit of sight. Beautiful moment. Or the first time I wiggled my toes in intensive care, because I really did not know if I'd ever walk again. I mean, I can't tell you how momentous those moments are, because they give you hope. They remind you to be grateful that, you know, the universe might just give you a second chance. And that's what I was clinging on to every moment of that horrendous time.
And it is remarkable as I look at you now, because you look honestly beautiful and perfect. So remarkable. You know, I know hospitals and doctors. We're going to talk about St. James's Foundation. And I know you went back eventually, didn't you? So you found purpose in work, in motivational speaking. I was lucky to hear you very recently at the St. James's Hospital Foundation, which I was involved in, fundraiser. And you spoke so beautifully. But was there a sense of guilt, you think, in moving on with your life because of what happened to your beautiful Brian?
Absolutely. I can't help but think it's kind of ironic. Now, everything I ever write, I claim I'm, you know, a bona fide atheist, but I'm obviously carrying screeds of Catholic guilt for a start. You can't shake that off. Even in your early 50s, it still remains. It's a complicated emotion. You have survivor's guilt, for a start. The guilt of... In all honesty, I actually felt like I'd be cheating on Brian. I felt like I was married to Brian. And in the early years, we're 7 years on now, 7.5 years on from Matty. But in the first few years, I couldn't imagine even contemplating being with anyone else, looking at anybody else. There was the other issue of, you know, my body, my disfigurement. I had this phenomenal therapist. Her name is, I'm going to call her out now, she'll kill me, but Dr. Sonia Collier, and she worked through a minefield of issues. So I had severe PTSD, I mean, horrific flashbacks of the fire that catch you out on the most unexpected moments. I had very complex grief because I lost my dad 3 weeks after Brian was killed. You could not think life would be that. I know you have an idea of how cruel life can be. I read your story this week, which, by the way, is fascinating and everybody should buy that book. But you know what it's like when it's grief layered upon grief. Mm-hmm. So incredibly complex grief. And then there were my body issues. So I couldn't abide the idea of showing somebody my scars. And it took a very, very long time before I met somebody that I would feel I could trust enough and have confidence in enough to do that. Because you have the invisible scars, but unfortunately, in my case, I have a lot of very visible scars too.
And that person is here with us. I see him beyond the glass in our studio today with our team.
He's hiding.
Mark, tell me about that. And how, when you did, I think you met him through a dating app, but when you did meet... It's what he said to you at first that you said, I'm going to love this guy.
Yeah. I tried going on a few sporadic dates here and there. You know, and I was pushing myself. I was actually being hard on myself. And I couldn't find the spark. But also, I'd get to maybe date two or three. I'd give people a chance. And they were nice guys. There was no one horrendously offensive. Sorry. You know, they were nice chaps. Yeah. But there was, it just wasn't there for me. And at the very beginning, I'm a great person for setting out goals for the year. And at the very beginning, every January the 1st, I write my year goals. And number one was just opening your heart a little, just a little, to the possibility of happiness and love again. And my little mantra was happiness and love, Zoe. Welcome it in. Happiness and love. And I didn't know what form that would take. And on the 2nd of January, those visualization works, people. on the 2nd of January, we started talking on this app, a nice app. Yeah. I say a nice app, but it's not Tinder. I'm not saying anything bad about Tinder, but it was a nice app. And we started talking, and very quickly after that, we met each other. Now, there are two things I would say that would make Mark as different to other people that I had briefly dated in this period of time. First off, yeah, I did fancy him as soon as I saw him. So
he's gorgeous.
That's a good start, isn't it? So I knew there was the potential of a spark there. Definitely. We'd already had good, you know, good banter. But I think the crucial moment was when I used to get this stomach churning anxiety. Of how the hell do you open up a story? that says hi when somebody says, so what's your story? Oh, my story's really cheery. You know, I was nearly burned to death, covered in scars. I'm a widow. And also, you know, have the odd echo of PTSD. So you might need to be a little patient with me. That's enough to send any relatively sane person out the door. But Mark just cut it off. He basically immediately put me at my ease by saying, look, I hope you don't mind. I recognised your photo on the profile. I know a little bit about what happened to you. I'm so sorry for the loss of your husband. And we don't have to talk about that today, or we can if you want to. And immediately, I literally felt this whoosh of relief.
Yeah.
And then we could talk about something else. It was delightful.
And I know you shared, he's private, so we're not going to talk about him too much, other than that we love him.
Yeah.
But you shared some photos on your, you do. That's very good. On your Instagram of him, I think you were in Rome.
Yeah.
Influencers would call it a hard launch, Zoe. And what was the reaction? I'm sure, I know all your families were delighted.
No, it was utterly gorgeous. I mean, beyond our family and friends, I got this surge of messages. You know, the one thing about writing the book, so I wrote the memoir, and that came out a few years ago, As the Smoke Clears. And this opened up a world of opportunities and all sorts of, I suppose, channels to people that you would not usually get to talk to.
Yeah.
And this was the first time since all of the fuss about the book and all of those kind of wonderful emails and letters. I mean, so many people wrote to me. This is the first time since then that I've had a similar reaction. And people want to see joy. People want to hear. I want to hear about a happy ending.
Yeah, people love happy endings.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Now, I know, as I said, before I let you go, you are an ambassador for the St. James's Hospital Foundation.
Yes.
And I know you'd like to see the burns unit there expanded and improved. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, I would like to just very briefly say that you've been very sweet and complimentary. I would not look like this. I wouldn't be able to be here without the phenomenal care of the experts in St. James's. So I can't tell you how many dozens of surgeries I've had. I'm still going through laser therapy for the scars on my legs 7 years on. There are just it's the tender, loving care that you receive in there. I like to talk to people about the patient experience. I like people because I think people need a human story. When we talk about hospitals, we think of big buildings. Unless you've been touched by trauma or illness, and pretty much all of us have at some stage, right? By somebody that we love. So the St. James's are currently under development. And my passion project is to get this phenomenal critical care building and a new and much improved and much larger burns unit built. Because you see, the thing is, at the moment, well, look, Ireland's growing, our population, all of those stresses are ever increasing, and we need a proper national burns unit that's going to suit every, and trauma, because critical care is all about trauma as well. So,
well, you're an ad for what they've done for you, and you're a brilliant ambassador. Look, so many messages. I can only have time for two. Listening to Zoe, her hearts go out to her after her hellish and unbelievable experience. She's amazingly resilient. Given what she went through, may she have a very long and happy life from now on. That's from Tom. And one more, Magella says, Zoe's the most wonderful lady who's been to hell and back. So delighted to hear her and her energy, and that she has found new love. She's so deserves happiness for the rest of her days. I told you people love Zoe. Just to say thanks so much for coming in this morning.
My pleasure.
And I know you're going to end up happy ever after with Mark. I'm going to remind listeners that they can find out more about the St. James Hospital Foundation at supportstjameses.ie. And if anyone's been affected by anything we've spoken about, there's info available on rt.ie/helplines. Zoe, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you. It's been my absolute pleasure.
Thank you so much. We'll take a break.